This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Sunday, but I waited it out for you. I wish I knew the way things were between us. I'm broken, I beg it better to yours. Every time I think I know you, I'm trying to stay cool in the downtown.
Welcome back to Sunday Groove, episode 22. I know the last two have just been me by myself, David Sunday, but this time I actually brought a guest, so listeners should be happy. It's not just me droning on about something, it's me probably talking too much to someone else. Anyway, I'm happy if this is your first episode. Just know that we'll talk about different music topics each month. And like I just mentioned, sometimes it's just me, but that's a very rare occurrence. Usually it's a guest each episode. And so this time I'm welcoming back a guest that's been here several times before. And he actually edits my podcast as well, so that is Mr. Andy Helleen. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right.
And Andy's still excited from his concert last night.
Yep, still buzzing from seeing Queen and Adam Lambert last night in Chicago.
You know, for some reason, I was trying to make him French, like make it pronounce his name like he was French. I was doing Adam Lambert for a while, and then like, oh,
like
yeah,
Christopher Lambert.
Exactly, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Because I don't watch American Idol, like I knew who he was, but like I never really heard people say his name, so I just wanted to pronounce it the French way.
You should try to like get that to catch on.
Yeah, I'll make a big Twitter thing about that and try to start a hashtag and everything. So usually when I have an episode, we do current spins briefly, and then we go into the topic of the episode. So that's what we're going to do. So here's the current spins. Andy, what are you currently listening to? Anything new and exciting?
For the most part, I've been listening to, I've been going through Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. And I started last August, and I've just finally got to 300 just the other day. So I'm like maybe like 60 off from where I should be because I started last year. But I was trying to do it one a day, but I'm doing it like one every like 3 days now.
Nice. Yeah, I should look into things like that. I just kind of just whatever I hear about and decide to listen to is what happens with me.
Yeah, so like what have you been into then?
Well, mine's everything, well, other than one more Alter Bridge song that just dropped. Have you heard the two newest Alter Bridge singles?
I heard the one.
Okay.
But I haven't heard the second one yet.
Yeah, the other one, I'm not sure if it's officially a single. It's just another idea of what's coming on the album. But it's called Pay No Mind. And it is unlike any other song I've heard by them before. It has like a keyboard part in there, but not like crazy synth or anything. It's just it's hard to describe. It's not something I ever would have expected in Alter Bridge, but I'm very happy to hear them trying some new things in it, because this being album number 6, I definitely want to hear, I mean, you know, I want to hear some of the qualities of their albums I love the most, but I also want to hear some new stuff.
Is it kind of like that Slip to the Void, where I think that had some kind of like organy intro?
It's got a different sound than that, and it's not quite as prominently featured in the song.
Okay.
But it's definitely there. You definitely will notice it.
Yeah, because that one was really like ominous and spooky. I kind of liked it.
Right. Yeah, oh, yeah. Actually, well, I'll get to that later. So, yeah, Pay No Mind's the newest one. And then I think last episode I mentioned Wouldn't You Rather. That's the official first single. The album's coming out in October, so I'm sure we'll get a couple more tracks before then. So, of course, I'm on cloud nine about that. Anytime anything new from Alter Bridge comes out, whether it be just another live album or whether it be a new, you know, studio album, I have to get it immediately, and I'm following everything leading up to it. So, anything prominently featured on the 300? You say you made it to 300 on there. Anything that stood out in your listening of the Rolling Stones albums?
Like recently, the last one I listened to was Black Sabbath. It was Master of Reality. That was like their third album. But then it was kind of weird. Like the day prior to that was Dolly Parton, and then prior to that was Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet. So it was like really wide range of the, you know, musical spectrum in like 3 days. And I actually did do those consecutive days. I tried to hit them all.
Nice. But. Cool. Well, my other new music comes from a concert I just went to last Saturday. And that was going to see Lights again. I saw her back opening for Young the Giant back in October or November last year. And then she decided to re-record her album like she normally does in a more acoustic version. And then she like decided to do a headlining tour for it and actually hit Atlanta. So I went to that this past weekend, and that was really cool. Different experience and everything. Because if you ever looked her up, her studio albums are always much more electronic and stuff. She gets into all kinds of different stuff on there and stuff she can do mostly by herself, I think. But then she goes back and does the songs more acoustic. And on this tour, she had violins, a viola, and a cello, I believe.
Oh, wow.
On stage as well, which just added to a beautiful mixture of music. And one of the few concerts I was able to leave without my ears ringing, because they made it loud enough, but not overly loud. And it was just perfect. So that was really cool. And there was an artist I'd never heard of until like I bought the ticket. So like a few days before going to the show, I listened to the EP of a artist named Tilly and enjoyed her EP. And she put on a really good set before Lights. So it was just cool. I mean, it's not my normal stuff. Most people listen to the show know I'm really into hard rock and just different types of stuff like that. But I do like some mellow stuff and some electronic. Just depends on what it is. And both of them have really good voices, and that goes far for me. Enjoyed the show. Lights played pretty much something from, well, no, not pretty much. Played something from every album she's done, and she's been around for like 10 or 11 years, so that was cool. And she even played in a YouTube exclusive song that somebody had to help her with the lyrics, which I thought was really funny. Because she like had us yell out what song we wanted towards the end, and somebody was so passionate about one song, she's like, well, you're going to have to help me because I really don't remember that song very well. So always love little things like that. It just means a lot when artists are really willing to play what they're going to play, but also play what the crowd really, really wants and connect with them.
Yeah, I saw that you like went to that show, and it looked pretty cool. I meant to like check out that album that you had mentioned, but I guess I just got, you know, distracted with like other music and things.
Oh, yeah, it's easy to happen. But I do encourage everybody to check out this stuff. Light's newest album is Skin and Earth Acoustic, and that's for the more mellow versions. Her newest album other than that was just Skin and Earth, and that's the full band versions. And then Tilly, her EP was Loudmouth. And both of the artists can be explicit at times, so if you're really sensitive to profanity, you know, just you're warned is what I'll say. But the intro song of this episode probably will be something from Lights' catalog. It might be her collab with a DJ, Felix Kartel, that's done really well. And I really dig both the acoustic and the full version. So I think that's really it for me for current spins. Was there anything else you want to give a shout out to?
No. Well, like we'd probably be here for like a month if I talked about all the stuff I listened to.
Yeah, even my solo episodes, I had to really just knock on to just like five things to discuss, because otherwise I could have just gone down my entire playlist, which would have been really exciting, I'm sure, and just name exactly everything I heard. Hearing live music is always just something exciting for me, because that's my absolute favorite thing to do. Like, I would rather do that than so many other things in life. I would just love to go see live shows constantly.
Agree. I kind of do that, though.
Right. I know you do. I don't live in a town that's even that close to that many good live shows that I'm aware of anyway, or so many of them play it during the middle of the week and that messes with work. So mine's unfortunately like once or twice a year most of the time. But I'm hoping this year will be a little more. This one was just perfect because my friend Chris is more into lights than I am, as he's been listening to her for like 10 years. So he just pretty much grabbed these tickets for the moment. It's like, hey, come to the show with me. I'm like, all right, okay, cool. But I just love any kind of music experience where I can kind of lose myself in the music and almost, I don't want this to sound sacrilegious, but it's almost spiritual just to like get lost in the music somehow. It's probably like a mixture of like, that or some hippy dippy little, you know, 70s thing. Yeah, man, feel the music. Yeah. But that's probably how it sounds to most people, but that's how I feel about concerts. So I was trying to think if there was anything else that I wanted to mention about the show without droning on too much. That would be the correct word. Yeah, so just check out those artists, and I'll tag them in the description, I'm sure. So if you forget or Tilly spelled a little different than you might expect it to be, so you'll see how to find that stuff, and I definitely encourage it. But this episode, Andy and I talked about a couple other things, and just he captured it perfect on actually one of his episodes that he did with Sherman about the 1994, was that I have to, when I do episodes, it's ones I have to be able to throw myself completely into, and if I can't throw myself completely into it, whether due to time or due to mood at the time that something's not connecting, I don't feel comfortable doing that episode. So it was really cool that it worked out. When I floated this idea, Andy attached to it pretty quickly. It was Desert Island albums. So it's a similar concept to, you know, you used to hear, I don't know, people still talk about, but like, what would be like the five movies you'd take on a desert island if you knew you were going to be trapped on it. And so this is that similar concept, but with albums. So what would be the first one you would take with you, Andy?
Well, I kind of put some, rules on my own, list, because it's like, maybe I took it too, like literally, like, being stranded on a deserted island, or is it desert island? I don't know. Or is it?
I don't know. I should have Googled
that. Is it a
that.
Desert island? Too?
Ooh, I wouldn't even need music. I'd just be so into the eating everything.
but I didn't want to bring any, like, you know, greatest hits, because that's like cheating.
Oh, you're gonna hate my list then. Dang.
Oh well. Like, that's your list, and that's your own personal island. Like, my island, like, I didn't want to have any greatest hits, or, like, you know, you could cheat, and, like, I wanted to bring this whole entire box set or something.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely didn't do box sets.
But then, I tried to kind of make it to, like, I don't want any, like, sad songs, really, when I'm on this island, because I want to be upbeat, because I'm trapped here for however long, so I didn't, so... Even though there's some albums that I really, really love, like, they might have some sad songs. I'm like, I want to stay upbeat as possible. So the first one is kind of one that I threw on at the last minute, because the four albums kind of came to me all at once. And then the fifth one was kind of like, man, I was going back and forth a lot. But it's Foo Fighters' Wasting Light from 2011. So it was a couple albums ago.
But nice. Awesome.
That's one that, like... out of their entire, like, catalog or discography, that's when I was super hyped up for, like, before it came out. And then ever since then, it's one that I always keep going back to. And I love that they play, like, in concert, they still do, like, four or five songs. Because usually, like, if a band does an album, they'll hit it, like on that tour. They'll have, like, four or five songs, and then they'll kind of drop out, you know, and not do as many anymore. But that one's still... it seems pretty heavy in their live set.
Awesome. Yeah. I will just go ahead and reveal that that's actually one of my albums. So,
oh, really?
yeah, it's one of those beautiful happy accidents, because we did not discuss our albums beforehand. So we have no clue what's on each other's list. But yeah, that was one of the, like, I'll go ahead and say about my list. I'm not going to cut you off completely there, but that this is the first time I didn't overthink the topic, and I just went with the first five albums that came to my mind that were so important to me. And this was an immediate one. Like, there was no extra thinking involved. Like, it was just like, it was such an obvious choice because I too followed it. All the lead up to it was so hyped for it. Actually got to see them on this tour. And it's probably one of my top five concert experiences. So this, it's such an important album to me. It's such a beautiful mix of different stuff. A lot of aggressive stuff, but like still some really good pop songs as well. Oh, and I'm glad to hear that you said that they still play a lot from it, because they should. It is, I would say, top three albums for them, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Ooh, man, I almost got kind of like a chill, like just thinking about it, because it is that good of an album. Like, and it's like you said, and I was going to say this too, kind of along those lines. There's a lot of like texture to it, because it's not fully acoustic like some albums they did before that, but there's still some like different like textures to, I think I Should Have Known, it's like slower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a different sound to it. Like, didn't that Chris Novoselic, like he played like accordion or something?
Yes.
Like, I didn't look at it fully, but I know he was on one of the songs, and I think it was that one.
Yeah, he played accordion. That's the weird sound you hear at the very beginning that's very ominous, the way he's slowly moving the accordion. It's definitely not like the accordion sounds you expect on a Weird Al polka.
Oh, yeah.
But it's definitely more ominous. But yeah, they did a lot of different stuff on this one. Yeah. One of my favorites is Dear Rosemary. I was trying to look up who was the person that sang backup on that one. Do you happen to know?
Yeah, it's Bob Mould, the guy from Husker Du.
That's right, yeah. I almost said Bob Mould, but I had no clue where he's from.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to mention too, like along the lines of the different like texture to the album. It's not just like in-your-face rock. I mean, most of it is, but there's still like, you know, some variety.
Right. Yeah, the first the tour I saw them on for this, they played exactly the first two tracks back-to-back, Bridge Burning and Rope, and those are very aggressive. But then it definitely, they played some of all kinds of stuff, so it wasn't just nonstop heavy. Yeah, Dear Rosemary is awesome. The only sad thing about live is you don't get Bob Mould's vocals, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So when all of you seen Foo Fighters?
Saw them 2015. That was the Sonic Highways tour.
Yeah.
Then I saw them 2017, like right after Concrete and Gold came out. Mm-hmm. And then I saw them last summer. So like the first and then this recent time were both at Wrigley Field.
Oh, okay.
It was like, yeah, like Sonic Highways came out and then they had that HBO show. And it was like right when they announced that show and everything. And I think maybe even the night that it came out, tickets went on sale for the Wrigley Field show. So it was like in the fall and they were already had booked that show and tickets went on sale for the following summer.
Right.
So it was like a huge, huge wait for that show. And it kept building the anticipation like over the year. So it was pretty cool. Like a cool experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one of the shows I considered trying to find a way up there, because didn't that one have like a lot of other artists attached to it that was kind of
That was
for them?
One they had like Cheap Trick opened, and that was the first time I saw them too. And then they had like, I think I ended up missing the first two bands because of getting there late and then with the crowd. Like, I don't like doing that. I don't like missing bands, but that was just a thing where it was like Wrigley Field was so massive and it was like parking isn't a good situation, so we parked like blocks away and rode the train in. But I started to get off track, but it was cool too because Steve Willey, who you know from Place to Be, he was at that show, and then another friend of mine came down from Wisconsin, and another guy I knew who's like friend of Place to Be Nation, his name's Brock, he actually flew from like the East Coast, so he was there too. So it was like this big a group of friends and then bands and everything.
Nice. The Brock's not Brock Lesnar, is it?
Oh, no, no.
That'd be interesting if it was.
But yeah, like, to get back to the album though, sorry to get kind of off track here.
Well, I did it. I it's my fault. I went to concert experiences, so I kind of started that derailment.
Oh, it's okay. But Yeah, that I know that Rope was the first like single, and that one just really blew me away too.
Yeah, it was their most unique single, at least up to that time. Like, it was not a straightforward song. Like, I don't know how to properly describe it, but like, to explain that to a non-musician or a non like uber music fan, but like, it doesn't sound like your typical pop song or anything you would hear a typical single. Like, it's catchy, it does have that for it, but it wasn't like Learn to Fly or anything like that, where you just know, you hear that song, you know it's a single.
Yeah,
I didn't get that vibe from Rope even, but it worked great as a single.
Yeah, because it kind of builds. It's got kind of like a different intro to it, and then it kind of builds up as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, another one. I think like Walk was another single, too. I remember that being attached to the Thor movie when that came out, which was the same summer.
Yeah, that was one of the few tracks that I didn't immediately connect with, but like, now it's one of my absolute favorites. And anytime I need inspiration, I throw it on. And that's a good reason why I made it to my Desert Island list, because like you said, you need some upbeat stuff to, you know, keep you in a good mood if you're trapped on a desert island. Mr. Misery and Matter of Time also connected pretty big with me last night when I was jamming out to it. Those are good rockers.
And even though, like I said, this is an awesome album and it made my list, like, and it's like a good rock album, like, the one that like I kind of like the least is the hardest song on the album.
White Limo.
Yeah, like I guess I liked more the variety, and that one's just kind of like they threw on this really hard in your face song, and it kind of doesn't fit with everything else, I think.
Right.
But yeah, like, I don't know, like, it doesn't grab me as much.
Yeah, I just take it as homage to thrash, because I know that was around the time. I think Lemmy's featured in the video, I want to say. Like, aren't they riding around with Lemmy from Motorhead in that video? There was something reference to Lemmy in that one.
Huh, I never saw the video, but it does kind of remind me, though, of like how you mentioned Lemmy. He had that band, like, or that side project, like Probot. Or mm-hmm. something that was all metal. So it's like he's got that side. So I guess he threw it on there for that.
Right. Yeah, there was something to do with that. I can't remember exactly. It's been too many years. And my Wikipedia article isn't very detailed on that kind of stuff. So any final thoughts on it then? Waste and Light.
I kind of feel like we could go on forever on that one, especially since we both had it.
Right. Well, yeah, if you got anything else, just continue. I just...
No, just that, like, it was just like a perfect time that it came out too. Cause I remember, how I was already hyped for it. I liked Rope, and I remember this being maybe not one of the first times, that it happened, but one of the first that I can actually remember is when a band like streamed the album actually before it came out. And I remember like previewing all the tracks, like, the week or so before, because they had some player on their website where you could like play the entire album.
Right.
Maybe it was a week before, maybe it was the day before, because I think, yeah, albums still came out on Tuesdays then, which kind of sounds like, oh man, that's so far away. Album came out on Tuesdays. But I think they had it on their website that Monday, and I was still taking college classes. So yeah, like, it must have been that Monday, because I remember coming back from class that day, and it was online already.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know I previewed at least some of them. I can't remember if I listened to the whole album. Knowing me, probably so, because I definitely have very little self-control when it comes to that most of the time if it's available. And the last couple of years, I've done a little better, but not a ton better. Because I know, like, I wore out a few tracks on Death Magnetic by Metallica when that came out. Like, I had listened to it, the tracks that were available, like, 15 times or so.
Oh, yeah.
Before it came out. So when the album came out, I was just wanting the six new ones. this album, like I said, is very important to me. I put it on, actually, I don't know if it's made a list before. It's but it's definitely on my Foo Fighters episode, which was episode 4 with Russell Sellers. If you want to go back in the backlogs, you can hear me break down every single Foo Fighters album that was ever made, and we ranked them, which was a very painful thing to do, because I love Foo Fighters, and so it was incredibly hard for me to rank albums by my favorites. And I know it was really fun because Russell and I had such differing opinions on a few of the albums. Like, some we have very similar opinions on, but there were several we had like massive disconnect in between our list, and not in a bad way, but it was just kind of cool. Like, I would have thought he would have had certain albums higher, and nope. There was like some, I had it at like 4 and he had it at like 7 or something. It was just pretty funny. Like, that's a pretty big difference.
Wasting Light's definitely, like, if I'd make a list, it would be number 1.
Okay. It was either 2 or 3 on my list. I do not remember. It might have been 3 at the moment, because at the moment I was writing one that I thought was... then maybe I have more of a personal connection with, but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I remember listening to that episode, but I can't remember your order. That was seemed like a long time ago.
Well, yeah, fourth episode, yeah. We're on 22, so that's a year and a half at least ago, and I've missed a month or two along the way as well. So, yeah, it's definitely way back. I think it was October of... actually, I know it was. It was October of 2017 when that came out, so good reason you would... not remember it off the top of your head, but it should still be on the Podbean app. Last I looked, like we still have all our backlogs, and I'm sure iTunes is the same way. So if you're interested in not new music information, but new episodes to you, definitely I encourage people to check out old stuff. So what would be your next album on your list?
My next one, I guess, like I said, the first like 4 came to me right away. But this is kind of one that's pretty new to me listening to out of the 5 I picked. It's Paul McCartney and Wings, Band on the Run.
Nice.
I wouldn't say I was really a huge Paul McCartney fan, but going back to the Rolling Stone list, it was like back in December. I can't remember what number it was, but I listened to that full album. And it just has stuck with me ever since, like, December. And I've bought some other Paul McCartney albums since then. And, yeah, that one is one where it's Band on the Run, you know. It's still on the radio and, like, Jet's on the radio. So I was familiar with his hits. But I never really went deeper into full albums until, I guess, that one.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that whole album. I actually just pulled it up. I know several tracks off of it, but it's not one I've ever listened to all the way through.
Yeah, there was just something about it where, I don't know, like, I guess it just kind of was one of those things where it was almost like magic. Like, listen to it, and I'm like, this is really good, and I think it should be higher on this list. Obviously, this list being not mine, but that Rolling Stone list, like, it was, like, low 400s or something, but I thought it should have been, like, way higher.
Yeah, they definitely capture a lot of stuff on their list a lot of times, but I don't think I ever agree even close to with the order they choose for each one. I'm like, yeah, y'all put a lot of great albums on here, but like there's like, I think there was a movie list they did not too long ago. And I was just like, what the crap are y'all thinking? Like there were the ranking of some of them. So yeah, I'm sure I would disagree with the order they put some of them in, but then again, everybody has their own reasons things connect to them, and so sometimes it can be very personal.
Yeah, because there's some like soft stuff that on there that's pretty good, like so it's got that variety, like it's got the rock songs, you know, like it starts out pretty hard with Band on the Run and Jet, then there's like Bluebird, which is like a slower song, and then there's like Let Me Roll It, which is like a bluesier song, but then there's one that like the last song on the album that I just really loved. It's called 1985, and it's hard to describe, but it's like it's got some like piano to it, but it's like just a really good like rock song. I think it's like 5 or 6 minutes long, and it just, I don't know, it just keeps going. It's like chugging along.
Nice. I'm actually going to write that down right now, so I'll check that one in particular out, because I know Band on the Run, Jet, I think I know Bluebird, and I definitely know Let Me Roll It, but I do not know 1985 at all.
Yeah. There's even one that is on, like, I bought this expanded, like, CD version, but I don't know if it's not on the American version of the album. I know that. So it could have been, like, on, like, the UK, because didn't they usually do that sometimes back in the 70s? Like, there'd be different tracks on different, like, you know, countries' albums.
Yes, especially if it was a British band as well. That happened a lot.
Yeah, there's one that's like Helen Wheels. That was just, like, really good too. So I'm just going to call it part of the album.
Yeah, it's listed on the one I'm looking at. Oh, I see. But it has in parentheses a traditional track only on the U.S. release. Yeah, I'd definitely count it. Which that's like a playful title because it sounds more like you're saying Hell on Wheels,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I thought the same thing. It was like Hell on Wheels.
I'm sure it's intentional. Awesome. Yeah, I didn't know if any Paul McCartney would make your list.
Yeah, so it's probably weird. Spoiler alert. I had Paul McCartney with Wings instead of, like, Paul McCartney with the Beatles on here. Which most people would probably have the Beatles, like, in their, like, top five.
It's sacrilege. That's what it is, Andy. Yeah. Absolute sacrilege. We're ending this now.
Well, I'm just a rebel. So.
Oh, crap. That made Kid Rock's Rebel Without a Cause pop in my head. I didn't realize this was 1973. I knew Wings were in the 70s, but I did not know when this one came out. So I'm gonna have to do more digging. Like, there's so many Paul McCartney albums, if you include Wings and his solo stuff in there. So I've only scraped the surface so far, even though I'm a massive fan. It's just one of those things that I think I forget I have access to all of it now with music apps and stuff like that. So I really need to just go listen to all of them, make a point of it.
I guess with so much music being out there, it's like hard to go back and listen to all of it because it's almost like, in a way, it's overwhelming. There's like, man, there's so many Paul McCartney albums, like you said, solo and Wings. And so that's kind of why I did that Rolling Stone. But there's some artists that maybe I needed more of a kick in the butt to kind of listen to them, like Bob Dylan or even Public Enemy. Those are some of the reasons why I wanted to do it. So it's kind of like, I feel like it kind of paid off. Like, hey, I found this Paul McCartney album that I might not have even gotten to.
Right.
I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I'm just saying that it was kind of a good, like, surprise to come across that.
No, that's a great thing. I know, like, back in the day, you know, I would just have to pick which albums I was going to buy. And so that was the ones that I would check out. So, like, obviously I wasn't going to get the entire discography of somebody like Paul McCartney, who's had, just a safe guess, at least 30 albums, amongst all his bands and solo stuff. So, like, I'm not going to drop that kind of money. Like, it took me years to collect all my Aerosmith albums, and I did a couple of them. I wish I hadn't, but in the early 80s, ooh, that was rough. But that was back when the drugs were too influential in their personal lives. That, yeah, they just were falling apart. But not trying to get off on that little thing. But yeah, so like, I would buy all those albums, and so that's the only way I took in the new albums. But now with music apps, I can just click on anything I want. And so yeah, I see like all those albums, and it's like, which one do I want to start with? Do I want to go chronological, or do I just want to click on one that I hear is important or is really good? Or, you know, how do I approach it? And it's a nice problem to have, but it's just one of those things that at the same point it leads to me still kind of getting overwhelmed with it and just clicking on a random one and going with it.
So then I guess it's safe to say that, yeah, you don't have any Paul McCartney on this list, so we're not like matching up again.
No, we did not match up this time. And I was trying to figure out which album I wanted to mention next, and I think it will flow well enough style-wise, though. And once again, I went with... this is the first time I've allowed Greatest Hits on my list. No, that's not completely true. I did use a collection of Queen one time, but usually I don't allow Greatest Hits, but it was just one of those that, yeah, it's kind of a cheat, but at the same point, it's such a good collection, and it's how I first really dove into this guy's music, and then later went back and got all the albums, and that is Tom Petty. I have his Greatest Hits on this list.
Oh.
Because I had heard a lot of his songs, but actually going back to the Waste and Light tour, Dave Grohl played Breakdown. And I just fell in love with that version and started going and listening to a lot more Tom Petty. And Greg had The Greatest Hits, so I borrowed it from him and listened to it. And the next thing I know, I'm buying all of the albums and listening to all of them. But I just could not pick one album of Tom Petty to from his non-Greatest Hits discography. So I did kind of cheat a little bit. But this album, just to give you a taste, it captures something from every era of Tom Petty up to the early 90s. You got stuff from the first album, American Girl, Breakdown. Then you move on to stuff that I really, really love. Even one kind of cheesy 80s sounding one, but it's a beautiful song, You Got Lucky. It's got a very 80s synth that is not typical in Tom Petty's songs, but that one it is. I Won't Back Down, Running Down a Dream, Free Fallin', Learning to Fly. And then it was also the first album to feature Mary Jane's Last Dance, which is perhaps one of their most famous songs. Definitely one of the first ones I heard on the radio growing up, because that was recorded in 93, or released in 93. And actually that song was not a hit. I remember hearing an interview with Tom Petty watching his documentary. He was so irritated originally. He's like, that should not be on my greatest hits. How can it be a greatest hits? It's new. But then it quickly became one of his biggest hits. So he's, and later in the documentary, he's like, so what do I know? And I thought that was pretty fun. Cause that's the only reason why I'll buy most greatest hits is if it has new material. If it's a band I'm really into, because I probably already have all their songs. but if they have some new stuff on there, maybe I'll click on it and buy it. And so this album, it's just, I think it would have been 2011, 2012, or somewhere around there. I just really started getting huge into Tom Petty. And so I owe it to a mixture of seeing Foo Fighters in concert and this Greatest Hits collection. So that's why it made it on the list, because it was my jumping on point. Do you have any thoughts on his Greatest Hits or just Tom Petty in general?
I don't think that's a cheat. Really, it's one that's like, it's got sentimental value to you. So, right. That's probably the first one I think I heard too. Is it? It's the single disc one, right?
Yes.
It's got like the band on the front. I think that's the first Tom Petty album I heard too. Because I heard a lot of those songs on the radio, but it was kind of like, I think one that was actually in the studio. They had a rack of like CDs, and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna go copy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It does kind of have a pretty good cross section of stuff too, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's got something like, it's got some of them from pretty much all the albums from their first through their 1991 album Into the Great Wide Open. And then like the new song, Mary Jane's Last Dance at the time was completely new. And that was one, I remember seeing the music video on MTV and hearing it on our local, classic rock station.
I want to say too that I think when I saw the Foo Fighters one of the times, the second time, they did Breakdown too, because I think Tom Petty had just like passed away and they did that in their encore.
Yeah, that would make sense. Some point in this fall will be the 2-year anniversary of his death.
Yeah.
So
yeah, then it would have been. I don't have a whole lot to share on Tom Petty.
I'm Paul Petty.
Yeah, Paul Petty. But, or like, who's that race car driver? Isn't there like a...
Richard Petty.
Yeah, Richard Petty. but no, that's one of the guys that I kind of got in, like I heard, yeah, the greatest hits and obviously all the radio hits. But a few years ago, a couple of my buddies, they are like big like Tom Petty fans. So when I kind of became friends with them, I kind of was like, all right, maybe I'll, you know, take another closer look at like Tom Petty. And yeah, like even though like the greatest hits, it's kind of scratching the surface, like the album's got so much stuff on there too,
right? Yeah, that I did a Tom Petty episode around the time of his death with Todd Weber, our the manager for the Pop Feed on Place to Be Nation. And I didn't know he wasn't as big into the 70s albums as I am. He was more into the 80s and 90s stuff. And then he hadn't heard all the new stuff, but like me being me, I dove into all of the albums minus like one of the side projects. And so it was just one of those, like, probably my most ambitious episode, honestly, maybe outside the Queen one. Like, I just dove into tons of albums.
Yeah.
And it was a project I enjoyed, but it definitely took me a long time to go through them all.
Yeah, I kind of like, I think the 90s one's the best. Like, Into the Great Wide Open would be my favorite.
It's a great album. It's a great time. I'm partial to a lot of the 70s tunes, but I love something from all the eras, and I think all the albums. So, I think we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll let you know a little bit about our website and stuff that's on our feeds, and then we'll get back into the final three of our list. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to Sunday Groove, episode 22. I'm back with Andy Helene, and I want to mention this right the second before I forget, because I forgot in my last few. If you want to find me or follow me, not in real life, that'd be creepy if you start literally following me, but if you want to follow me on Twitter, Sunday Groove PTB on Twitter. I ran out of letters, so I couldn't put the N, and somebody else had stolen Sunday Groove already. That was already an active handle. So Sunday Groove PTB on Twitter. Follow me, contact, you can comment on there. Would love a retweet too. That'd be great. I'm trying to just get some more listeners here and there, but, just if you want to comment, that's probably the easiest way. If you do follow me or try to follow me on Facebook, definitely send a private message, because I will not add a random person if I don't know who you are. And, but you know, if, definitely I love feedback. So if you, want to comment that way, it's also, I share it probably sometimes in the Place to Be Nation comics. Even though it's not an appropriate place, it's just a place that I have a lot of active people. So I'll share it there sometimes, but I definitely have a Facebook profile as well. But anyway, that's not what I'm supposed to be discussing right now. We do what we call Place to Be Nation live reads, where we tell you what's on our feeds right now at PlaceToBeNation.com. So I'll start with Place to Be Nation pop feed. We got a new Todd Weber episode of Weber Has Issues. It's a pod blast talking about three new Marvel books and how accessible they are to comics fans. This turnaround, it's The Marvels Epilogue by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. History of the Marvel Universe, number one, with Mark Waid and Javier Rodriguez. And the much-hyped House of X by Jonathan Hickman. And I know I'm going to butcher this, but it looks like Pepe Larraz, or Larraz. So Pepe, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not, but if you are, I'm sorry that I butchered your name.
You're not sorry.
I'm not sorry. No. Jenny and Tim flipped the script on this new edition of Talkin' Pop by welcoming multi-show host and multi-talented Andy Atherton. We have a lot of Andys around here for a journey that touches on Andy's ventures as a podcaster, producer, screenwriter, bartender, DJ, and choreographer. I'm going to have to hear that. I hope it's a dance choreographer. That'd be amazing. But in my head, that's what's happening right now. Hearthstone and Fanboys debut a new, potentially ongoing theme, Fix It or Forget It, in which they look at 2010's Jonah Hex, starring Josh Brolin and Megan Fox. Is it salvageable or is it irredeemable trash? I'm going to go with it's a mixture of both. I had forgotten I'd watched this movie until they talked about it, and now I was watching a few minutes of it earlier today on HBO Go, and it is bad, but it's so humorously bad, at least so far. So, and it's only like 80 minutes long, which is insane. So it's definitely easy to sit down and watch. And they actually just had a new episode just popped up yesterday where they go through a countdown of the rogues galleries and comics from different heroes. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of arguments between Greg and Nick, because I know they have very different feelings on rogues galleries of villains. Pop Goes the Movies has Andy Atherton and J.R. Arsenio D'Amato, and they discussed the latest major summer movie release, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it's a spoiler-filled review, so be prepared, be warned. That's a fun movie. I just watched it 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah. Did you see that one, Andy?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Are you a Tarantino guy?
Not a Tarantino guy, I guess, but I've seen his movies. Probably not popular, but I could take or leave him.
Okay. I like a lot of his stuff, but I do feel he really makes his movies overly long. This was the first one I didn't really mind the length of the movie. Not the first one, but one of the ones that I feel that with. On a recent episode, I talked about my current favorite songs. That was episode 21, and the movie Yesterday that features a lot of the Beatles music. So check that out. It's mildly spoiler-filled, but really, it's just me talking about the things that are already in the trailer and then telling people some stuff about it. So then JT joins Andy to discuss Kevin Smith's Dogma in the latest and greatest episode of Laugh in Theater. Then DC4U is back with the first week of Justice League month. Russell and Todd discuss JLA's greatest stories, adapted media, and creators only on the DC4U podcast. They also discussed the divisive Snyder Cut. That's what everybody's been wanting of the Justice League movie, and I don't think it's ever going to happen, but they'll talk a lot about that. Then we also have the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament continuing. Follow on Facebook. I almost said follow on Tumblr. No, not on Tumblr. Follow on Twitter. You can follow either the Place to Be Nation main account or the I Love the 80s thing. You'll find it. And vote on there. It's not I Love the 80s. Well, the icon says I Love the 80s. It's Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. But it's 6 polls a day. I have a lot of fun voting in it. I was heartbroken the other day when Out of Touch by Hall & Oates was outvoted. But, you know, it happens. So get in there, vote, and weigh in. It's going to be going on for a while because there were like 500 songs. I'm sure we've only gone through maybe 100 or so, right? Maybe 200 so far. So it'll be going on for a while, but it doesn't take long to vote. And they always include links to the song. So it's a quick thing if you need to remind yourself of what a song is. So what do we have going on the wrestling feed, Andy?
Oh, well, you said that it wasn't on Tumblr, but it would have been a good way to reference I'll Tumble For You from, was it Boy George?
Maybe.
Yeah. See, they could have referenced that, or was it Culture Club? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, Boy George was in Culture Club. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew the name of the guy. I couldn't think of the name of the band for now. But to get back on track, sorry, I took us off.
No, you're good.
Over at the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, Ben Zanny welcomes indie wrestler Jaden Newman to Row 1, Seat 1. No Holds Barred is back. Aaron and JT return with a GWWE pay-per-view television match ever. The greatest television matches ever are going to be focused in this episode. And then in the latest episode of the PTB podcast, JT Scott and John D'Amato break down Survivor Series from 1989. Don't miss the pilot episode of a new ECW-focused podcast entitled PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, where hosts JT Rosero, Jennifer Smith, and John D'Amato reveal the concept of their show and what is to come. Then on placetobenation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 is off and running, with a brand new piece on Woodstock 1994, as well as a piece where JT looks back at Bob Backlund challenging Bret Hart for the WWF title on Superstars. And don't forget about Glenn Butler's weekly walk on the website as well.
Yeah, it's a written piece. We have one every week. The social media pages and message board of Bigelow34ProBoards.com for the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. That is a hard thing to say. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list.
It's like alphabet soup.
Yes. And as far as 1994 goes, that was maybe 2 weeks ago, the Andy and Jason Sherman did an episode about alternative rock albums from that year, and that was really cool. I know Andy and I overlapped on one album that I put on my first 90s episode. I've done a few 90s episodes, and that was Purple by Stone Temple Pilots.
So good.
Oh, yeah. That was actually the first album I bought of theirs, and it was just kind of a random purchase because, like, I knew maybe two songs off of it, and there were several albums to choose from, and I was like, I'm just going to go with this. So definitely check that episode out. It shouldn't be hard to find in the feed. Any other thoughts on any of that stuff, Andy?
Yeah, it was like, well, about the episode I did with Jason Sherman, like, right as soon as we were done recording, I was like, no, I forgot one. that would be on my list. And he's like, do you want to re-record, I think? And I was like, no. We're leaving it. Right. But it was Motley Crue. They had a self-titled album in 1994. It was like Vince Neil was gone. And they had a guy named John Corabi who's on vocals. And it's like really like gritty and like, I don't know, heavy and like dirty. And it's like different than like the rest of their stuff. But I think it's kind of like the kind of like forgotten album in their catalog.
Nice. Yeah, I almost always regret leaving out an album on every single list I do. So it's an easy thing to happen. But I thoroughly enjoyed that episode, so I was glad y'all did that. Looking forward to more 1994 stuff.
Yeah, that year is good. Just not just even music, too. Like TV shows, movies, everything.
Yeah, I know I went through read one of the early articles where it went through a lot of the movies, and I wasn't even, I guess I didn't realize some of those movies came out in 94, or had forgotten at least. So, back to our topic. What is your third album you want to mention?
Not sure which one I want to mention first, because I didn't really order them in any... kind of like I didn't like have this is like my number one or anything, but these next three are like albums where if you know my music habits then they might be kind of obvious. So I'll say the next one is from Alice Cooper, is when he was in the Alice Cooper band. It was their 1973 album Billion Dollar Babies, and it's just one that like I play like all the time. I'm probably playing it like every week. I'll listen to that album.
Nice. That might have to be the first full length of his I've listened to, because I know I've listened to several tracks since we last talked, but I still haven't heard an entire Alice Cooper album from start to finish. Not for disliking, yeah. Just me being all over the place.
It's probably, if you're going to listen to anything from Alice Cooper, any album, that's probably the one that's like maybe the most consistently good from start to finish, because like the band albums... were all like kind of that garagey rock sound, and they kind of had some like like some longer songs thrown in there. But then when he did his solo stuff, it's all like really like varied. He'll have like, he had a couple heavy metal albums, went back to garage, had like the 80s, you know, like, hair metal style. So it's kind of like across the board, but I think Billion Dollar Babies would be the one to listen to if you're going to dive in.
Nice.
Cause yeah, it's got, songs he plays regularly on tour too. Obviously Billion Dollar Babies, No More Mr. Nice Guy are the big songs. There's one that's kind of funny. It's Elected, and he's played that like election years. That's like usually his like closing song. And there's another one that he recently added to this tour, and it's so like crazy, and the name sounds weird. It's called Raped and Freezing, but it's about like being stranded like in Mexico, and some I think like lady like tries to pick up a hitchhiker but tries to like hit on him. So but it's really kind of a tongue-in-cheek like everything else they do.
Oh, okay.
But they finally did that on tour, and it's so crazy. It's got some weird little like it's hard to describe. It's like some kind of percussion-y thing. You can like really dance to it.
Nice. Any other thoughts on that album?
I actually talked about that at the dentist the last time I went in for a checkup. Because, yeah, there's, like, you got the time where you're with the hygienist, and then they're, like, the dentist is going to come in, and he's going to, like, check you over. Well, in the meantime, I guess he was with some other patient. So I was sitting there with the hygienist for a while, and she, like, knows I go to concerts. So she's like, anything you got coming up? And this was back in June. I was like, yeah, in July I'm seeing Alice Cooper. He's coming to town. And she's like, oh, wow, that'll be good. And I'm like, yeah. I forgot how I got onto it, but I talked about there's a song on there called Unfinished Suite, and it's like it's got weird Dennis Drill sounds in it. And like in this old – and at the time I had watched this old concert from this tour actually, and like they have some weird moment in the show where there's like a tooth dancing on stage, and Alice comes after him with a big toothbrush and starts like brushing the tooth and like beating him up. So I was like telling that to the hygienist lady.
Nice.
So yeah, when I was getting drilled or not drilled, but like I was thinking of that song, you know, when you can hear that, you know, it just reminded me of that song.
Nice. Well, I don't have any deep thoughts on any of those. I mainly just know No More Mr. Nice Guy. And off top of the head, that's the only one I know off that album. I might know something else. My next album could not be any more different than Alice Cooper. And that is actually, and I did reuse this album, but I don't care. It's one that would be very important to me on a desert island. And pick it, because I've never listened to one of their full lengths besides, no, that's not true. It's one of the only albums other than that I've listened to of theirs. That's The Very Best of Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Oh, sweet.
I have listened to one of their albums recently, Private Eyes. I listened to that album, which was really good. So I guess really I could have gone for that, but it didn't have my favorite singles off of it, so I went back to this. But it's got 18 tracks on it, the one I'm looking at, and it's the one I own. And it goes from their like more soulful early stuff of Sarah Smiles. of course, the songs like Rich Girl that everybody knows. Kisses on My List, which is great.
Maneater, is that?
Oh, yeah, Maneater's on there. Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boy, she'll chew you up. Sorry. I'll stop before I embarrass myself more than I probably already have. Out of Touch, which is the one I was sad lost the other day in the 80s tournament. Say It Isn't So, One by One. Let's see. It's a Laugh. That's probably the biggest song. Oh, and Did It in a Minute. It's a really good one as well. So, yeah, it's a fun thing. I picked that album because it's got so many other greatest hits, but it's so upbeat, and it just makes me happy. Like, I cannot pop on Hall & Oates and not get happy. Like, that is them, Bee Gees, and like just a few other things. Like, it doesn't matter what's going on. I'm going to sing along and I'm probably going to dance, and it's probably going to at least somewhat improve my mood. So imagine being on an island and needing to improve my mood. This is a good go-to.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd be on the desert island, like, bopping around with, like, a handful of cake, and you're like, yeah, Hall & Oates.
Yep, awkward white boy dancing. Yeah, you should look up, actually, no, it's not them, it's Wham. Some of the GIFs of Wham dancing is hilarious. I love sharing GIFs all the time on social media, and so that... I was getting confused with my 80s band there, but yeah, Hall & Oates have been around from the 70s on, but their most popular stuff was definitely in the 80s, and that's when Rich Girl and all that stuff really started. I hope I'm not misquoting this, but anyway, definitely has an 80s feel. Oh, and I forgot their biggest song, You Make My Dreams. That's on there as well, of course, and that's beautiful. First heard that on The Wedding Singer, and fell in love with it, and that's probably started my love of Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
Do you have any connection to them?
Yeah. I was, I was like trying not to like laugh in the background when you were talking. Because have you ever actually heard of the Call & Oates hotline?
If I have, I don't recall.
Really? And it was like a thing that I saw online or something. And it was something I actually called it at work. It was like Call & Oates, and it's like a hotline. And it was like, you can actually call this number, and it's like some automated thing. And it's like a voice, like, press 1 for say it isn't so. And it, and you'll actually hear a song or something. There was like 4 to choose from. So it's like,
and it doesn't charge you anything or anything? It's not like one of those, it's not a scheme or anything?
I don't think so. One guy at work, 'cause I called it on my lunch break. I'm like, I'm going to call this. And, he was like, you're going to get charged probably like $300 for that. And I don't think I did.
Nice. Yeah, I have heard actually, that you know, I do vaguely remember that being a thing. Speaking of them also, if you want to kind of a fun preview of some of their songs, look at the video of Daryl Hall on Jimmy Fallon's show, and Jimmy Fallon just completely fanboys, going through a lot of their hits, and they'll Daryl Hall on The Roots will play little snippets from each song with Jimmy Fallon awkwardly singing along. But it was a very humorous video.
I don't think I've ever listened to a Hall & Oates album. I've just heard the hits.
Right. Oh, I mean, that was me until probably just a few months ago. I just randomly clicked on Private Eyes on my Amazon Music app, and I've listened to it several times, and it's got several of the hits on it. Well, it's got I Can't Go For That.
Yeah.
Did It in a Minute. Of course, Private Eyes. And I guess that's it as far as hits.
Did you? So, this is kind of off topic, but still kind of on topic. Did you ever watch that Live at Daryl's House?
I've watched a little bit of it. Not a whole episode, but I've watched little snippets.
Yeah, I've never seen a full episode either, but I've watched. It's got to be a couple of years ago now, but I watched like a bunch of YouTube clips with bands, like, because you can see, like, I think there's like Rob Thomas was doing a song, and this band like Chromeo was doing one of their songs. Because don't they like do Hall & Oates songs, but then they also do songs of the guest, right?
I believe so. What I've heard, I believe so.
Yeah, it's like a mix. So I've seen like a little bit of. Just Chromeo and like Rob Thomas and I think somebody else.
And it's amazing how good he still sounds at his age.
Yeah.
And still has a really good head of hair too. I'm jealous of that. I'm going bald and gray, so I'm very jealous there.
Man, that's so a good pick.
What's awesome? I'm glad you like it. What's your next one?
I'm gonna go with it's one of Alice Cooper's band members. His name's Ryan Roxy, and he's done like the guy, I guess, like he's only been on my radar for the last like 5 years, but he's been around in like various bands and side projects for like 30 years. Like he was even in like Slash's band when they did one of the Snake Pit albums.
Okay.
But he's like a guitar player, songwriter, and he did an album in 2012. It's called Two Sides to Every Story. And why it's like the two sides is because it's basically like two albums in one. He has like like 12 songs, you know, studio recordings, like plugged in and everything. But then they do acoustic versions of all of those songs. So you get like the rock version and then you get like the acoustic version.
Nice.
And so it's like really kind of unique. He's kind of like, if you've heard of like Cheap Trick and that, he's kind of in that pop rock vein of his own stuff. So it kind of hits a good spectrum. There's like some rock songs and there's some like mid-tempo songs. But I really like that guy's stuff a lot.
So. Which album by him are we talking about? I'm sorry, I missed the title.
Oh, it's Two Sides to Every Story.
That's right, yeah. What year is that from? Oh, I found it. 2009, looks like. My Wikipedia has let me down on I can't click on anything on his. I just have the list of everything.
I guess I thought it was 2012 because I think that that's what Apple Music listed, but I think that might have been a re-release because I know he's got like he put it out, I think, on like CD initially on some label, but I didn't get it until a couple of years ago. He has got something called the Roxy Box where I think some of his stuff's out of print, so he put together his own little box set of stuff.
That'd be a good thing. Yeah, the according to Wikipedia, which I'm not saying this is correct, it's said it was available via Bandcamp and then this R77 Sound Records.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be Roxy's own label or some kind of way he put it out, looks like.
But, yeah, like, he's kind of fast becoming one of my favorite musicians in the last, because I kind of met him on off. Thing just by happenstance or something. I was seeing the Alice Cooper Motley Crue show, and I was walking by the merch stand, and then like I was like, I kind of elbowed my friend, and I'm like, hey, I think Alice Cooper's guitar player Ryan Roxy's at the merch table, and then he was there, and I guess that's something he does every show is he'll go out to the merch table before the show and like sell his own stuff and. Take pictures and stuff. So he's real like fan friendly, and so I guess that kind of helped me like him too. I like his stuff, and he's like real down to earth.
Yeah, that adds so much to my appreciation of artists, because like I know the artist I just saw in concert, Tilly, she's only been around maybe like 5 years or so as far as like putting out albums that are like, I'm sure she's been making music longer than that, but still, so she's still pretty in the early phases. So it was cool that she did a meet and greet, but like some even not an extra pay, but just at the merch table where you can meet up with her. But like I've seen some big artists that will do that too, and it always adds so much to it. It was just so personable, and that can influence, you know, just the love for a band or an artist.
Yeah.
Well, cool. My next album is an album we actually referenced earlier, but I didn't want to give away it being on my list, and that is Alter Bridge 3.
Ooh.
Slip to the Void, from the moment I heard it, and that's the opening track, has become one of the most played songs by me of theirs. Like, it's so ominous, it's so perfect, and it fits so well just any time, but especially with the theme of that album being going from a lot of struggle to looking more hopeful by the end of it. I love that whole theme of it, because you can just hear it as you go through the album. They've always been a band that's provided hope through a lot of their lyrics, and this one to begin with sounds like it's not going to be that, but it quickly becomes that. And so it just kind of tells the story of somebody struggling with their faith and with just life in general, and then as time goes on they realize, oh, it's going to be okay, and in time it's just gonna might take a while. So it's a wonderful collection of hard rock and then some more ballads. And I don't think there's a bad track on it. Like, you've got the heavy first two songs, Slip to the Void and Isolation, and then you got some ballads. Make It Right. I Know It Hurts is one that always emotionally resonates with me. Life Must Go On. All this stuff. Like, it just makes you feel good. And so I think this album captures the hope better than, or at least as good as, any of their other albums. And it's actually, most of the time you get it with the two extra tracks, so it's 16 tracks long, And I don't dislike any songs on it. Like, even the extra two tracks that are considered extras, Home and Zero, are both just beautiful. I was singing them yesterday. I actually damaged my voice last night singing along with both those songs. So, and this album was the first one that their guitarist, Mark Tremonti, sang a verse on the songs. Normally, he just did backup vocals. That was on Words Darker Than Their Wings. So if you haven't heard this album, definitely check it out. I would say it'd be a pretty good jumping on point as far as singles, because Ghost of Days Goes By is a very relatable and easy to jump on song that's not like overly heavy. It's just poppy enough without just being straight up pop, if that makes any sense.
Man, this is one that, like, how, like, four jumped out at me right away. This is one that was like a contender for the fifth spot. So we almost nice. Tied again. Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. I knew it was a possibility one of their albums might make it on your list. Three I go back and forth with of whether it's more important to me than Blackbird. I typically go with Blackbird because it was the first one that I fell in love with and like made me the uber fan I am now, that where I follow absolutely everything, even their solo careers. And just a little shout out towards that. Like I was just mentioning, when bands will let you meet them, I know Mark Tremonti, anytime he does a tour, at least with his solo project, Tremonti, if you buy a piece of merch, you get to meet him. And his merch, I mean, that includes like the CD, which is $10. So it's not like it's, you got to buy a $50 t-shirt to meet him. No, it's like you can buy anything. And by the way, his t-shirts aren't 50, just for the record. But it's just like, that adds a lot to my enjoyment of all their stuff as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You were talking about, we even mentioned Slip to the Void. Those first four songs on the album just like blew my mind when I listened to the album.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like the perfect four songs. So like, I'm kind of wishing, I don't know if they did, but I wish they would do those back to back to back sometime.
Yeah, I don't know if they did them all back to back. I know when I saw them on that tour, they definitely opened their set with Slip to the Void, and I like chills went down my spine. I was just like so fan struck and awestruck, or all those things together. It was so amazing.
I think even though the first four songs like blew my mind, my favorite one is probably Coeur d'Alene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my favorite one on there. But nice. it's hard to can't really pick a bad song off there because there isn't one.
Right.
Man.
So what do you have for your last album?
Man, I almost want to talk about Alter Bridge more. I want to keep going. Like how I said, I went back and forth on stuff to pick. Like, this one is one that was the first one that I wrote down. And it's from Kiss. It's their album from 1976. It's called Destroyer. And it's not my favorite Kiss album, but it's the best sounding Kiss album. And it's like, it's kind of weird. It's like produced by Bob Ezrin, who like did a lot of, or all the early Alice Cooper band stuff. So it's got some similarities, because when I was getting into Kiss, I was getting into Alice Cooper, and I'm like, there's a lot of like studio techniques and different things that I could tell was Bob Ezrin. So the album is just, I think it's just totally awesome if you listen to it. It sounds like nothing else Kiss had did before that or even after.
Nice.
I don't know how familiar.
I've got to jump more into. I listened to them a good bit after the movie Role Models. That movie featured a lot of Kiss songs. And then I listened to a little bit after one of the early Songs with Friends episodes, or maybe one of their middle ones. They had a Kiss song on there. And then I know you've mentioned them a lot of times, so I'll click on several other stuff when you mention them. But I probably have listened to some of their full-length ones, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't Destroyer. I could actually pull up their discography and find out real quick. But keep talking. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's probably like with Kiss. You're either going to really like them or you're like going to be like, eh, they're okay. There's like no real middle ground. You're either like in the Kiss army all the way or you're just kind of like, sure, whatever. but this one, because yeah, I guess they were that kind of early, like, you know, glam rock party music, like rock and roll all night and stuff like that. But then when they did Destroyer, I think it sounds awesome. Like, because I think some of the early stuff wasn't really produced as good and was kind of it was kind of like self-produced almost. But then Destroyer, they had Bob Ezrin came in, and he even like totally like rearranged some songs. Like if you've heard God of Thunder, that was actually like a more faster-paced Paul Stanley song, but Bob Ezrin like turned it into like a Gene Simmons song and like slowed it down, and that's one of their like signature songs that's got that like, like a metal, heavy metal riff, but it wasn't even that before the album came out, I guess.
Nice.
And it's got Beth on there, too. That's, like, one of the big Kiss songs. But there's also Detroit Rock City. And then one of the things, I guess, like where I should probably mention it, the similarities between Bob Ezrin's stuff that he did with Kiss and Alice Cooper was he kind of used, in a couple songs, he'd have kids, like, singing backup vocals. And he'd throw in, like, weird sounds like calliopes or like bells, like church bells and stuff.
Any Hell's Bells?
It's some song like, I think, like Great Expectations, like there's bells in there. And even like Detroit Rock City has some kind of effects at the beginning, like it sounds like somebody revving up a car and then somebody crashes their car at the end. And I think Flaming Youth has like the calliope or like some weird noises. You can kind of pick out some like, well, what's that in there? So I had to like look up what these like sounds were because I was trying to pick it apart in my head when I was listening to it the first time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I'm going to check it out. I definitely know Detroit Rock City, God of Thunder, and Beth. I definitely know those and probably
Shout It Out Loud.
I'm pretty sure I know.
Yeah, those are the big ones. But I really like Flaming Youth is a good one. And the last song on there, it's like, Do You Love Me? Like, I think there's like a demo version of that where it doesn't really sound that good, but it's like so much better. I think Bob Ezrin like made it more slick and kind of polished. I guess he was good at polishing up stuff.
Nice. Well, it's kind of cool that you mentioned a metal type album, and because that's what's going to be my last album as well, is not Kiss, but Metallica. And I put S&M on here because I wanted the most beautiful version of their songs to be both energetic but also kind of calming at times as well. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I love the sound of strings added to music. It added a lot to Light Set. It adds a lot to Alter Bridge's album that came out last year, the Royal Albert Hall show. And then, of course, this was one of the most infamous ones from 1999. Metallica's never sounded better than this. Like, James's vocals were the best they ever were. And that's because he did a lot of warm-up exercises and just really took it seriously. And, of course, being from a live show, it's extremely long as far as the amounts of songs that's on there. So like just earlier today, like I didn't just skip to the ones I normally listen to. Like I was listening to track two, The Call of is either Cthulhu or Tulu. I think it's just Tulu. One of their instrumentals, Off Ride the Lightning, and it's so beautiful and the orchestra adds even more to it. Of course, Master of the Puppets, A Thing That Should Not Be, and then of course a lot of the hits like Fuel, Memory Remains, and stuff like that. But it's the first album of theirs that got me to appreciate a couple tracks that I'd overlooked before, and that was Bleeding Me and Outlaw Torn. Both of those are like 10-minute epic songs off of Load, their 1996 album. But you add in the orchestra, and it just really I don't know, doesn't make that makes those songs not feel overly long like they might have felt on the album, like the studio album. So the it's a good mixture of songs, a lot of the greatest hits, but also just some songs that maybe hadn't gotten as much love and as much attention, but it captures it perfect. And something I go to on a regular regular bass. Basses, yeah, that would be the correct thing.
Yeah, Metallica was on my short list for that, the fifth spot. I almost kind of thought about going with, like, the Black Album. But I really like S&M, too. Like, and I know that we've talked about it before. I think, like, Greg really loves it. Mm-hmm. And it was that era where I got into Metallica. Like, I know people jumped in the 80s, and I kind of came in the mid to late 90s. And that's one of the first, it was like maybe the first Metallica album that I remember purchasing, like right at the time it came out. Cause the other ones I had bought and they'd already been out.
Right.
So I have a good memory attached to that one, like buying that, like, new and unwrapping it and listening to it. I know what you mean with, like, Outlaw Torn. Cause I don't think it was a single or anything. It was, like, too long, and I didn't have...
Oh, it was way too long for a single.
I didn't have Load at the time either, so that was my first exposure to, like, hearing that song, because I had bought, like, you know, some of the singles and stuff. But yeah, because it was just loaded with stuff. You had, like, the 90s stuff. You sold the 80s stuff on there, like you said. And I liked the new songs that they did, too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I neglected them a second ago. No Leaf Clover and Minus Human. Both were previously unreleased and really cool. I would still love to hear them do a studio version of those songs just to see what they'd sound like without the orchestra.
I'm just curious. I agree. But then the other thing is like, I think there's a point where I was a year or so ago, I was going back listening to all those Metallica albums going through, and I noticed that, like, the symphony stuff doesn't sound, like, too far off, because sometimes bands will do it and it's like, are they just doing it to do it, or does it really fit well? But they had, like, on the Black Album, like the Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters, and those were, like, softer, and they had some kind of that. Didn't Michael Kamen work with them on, like, one or both of those songs?
Probably. I don't know for a fact, but I wouldn't doubt it. I know Michael Kamen really took a lot of time with S&M.
So it's
tweaking
not too
the symphony
far,
parts.
Yeah, so it's not too far out, because they were almost kind of like had some of that incorporated in their album. So it's almost was like they were, like, building to that. Is the way it, like, it seemed to me. Like, it was kind of a natural progression for them to end up doing a symphony thing.
Right. Oh, it's awesome. It's a very important album to me. I'll admit it didn't actually grab me quite as much at the time. I was I heard it at the time, but, like, later became one of my favorites. My jumping on point of with Metallica was the Black Album, but it wasn't right when it came out, because I was just, like, 7 when it came out. Can't imagine many 7-year-olds purchasing a Metallica album. So I was probably, like, 11 or so when I got it, but. Anyway, yeah, it's an important one, and it would just be fun to have that variety. So, like, on my desert island, I would have 3 kind of metalish albums, or 2 metalish ones, 1 hard rock, and then 2 much more, 1 pop, you know, being Hall & Oates, and then, of course, Tom Petty or retro rock kind of thing. So a lot of variety on mine. What was yours again? Yours is Ryan Roxy,
Alice Cooper, Kiss. Paul McCartney, and Foo Fighters.
Nice, yeah.
So it's basically more like rock, and I was trying to go with, like, studio albums, too. I guess that was kind of one of my things, is, like, I don't know.
I normally am that way. I just, like I said, this is the first episode. I'm an overthinker. This time I was just like, no, let's not overthink it. Let's just do it. So I just put the list together pretty quickly, actually. So that was kind of fun, actually, not...
But I guess I think
overdoing it once.
If I was being actual, like, literal, I probably would just go by whatever the most played on my phone, because that's where I listen to music, you know, right? So if you were crashed, you'd really only have the battery life of whatever's on your phone and maybe your albums on there. So I should have just listed my top five played albums on my phone.
In this scenario, you crashed with the boombox an unlimited amount of D batteries, or C batteries, whichever one your boombox took. So you just get to play your CDs over and over again.
Or like the magical never dying, what was that? MP3 player or tape recorder or Walkman that Star-Lord had.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, in this scenario, that's what you got. I don't know why you only got five of your albums, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to run you late for work. I just, that's why I was rushing a little towards the end. But I just really enjoyed this, man. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And do you have anything you want to promote real quick?
I'm just a lurker and a producer of Sunday Groove.
And you do an awesome job with the production of this show, and I'm very happy that you do it because I don't know how to do this. So I was very happy when you jumped in.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thanks for being here. As far as me, I don't know what episode I have coming up next. This one's actually sooner than usual. I don't know exactly when it will drop, but it definitely won't be a full month from the last one. And then I know pretty soon, I don't have a date yet, but I'm going to be on Laughing Theater with Andy Atherton talking about a comedy I enjoy. So I'm not going to reveal the title because he normally just does teasers. So I'm just going to just give that little tidbit of information. So at some point in either August or early September, you should hear me on an episode of that. And other than that, I think that's the only thing I got going on as far as podcast-wise. So follow me on Twitter or however, and I will catch y'all down the road.
Welcome to Call & Oates, your emergency Hall & Oates helpline. To hear one-on-one, please press 1. To hear Rich Girl, please press 2. To hear Manita, please press 3. To hear Privatize, please press 4.